This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So we start with the big story probably of this week, which is the Indian Army striking Pakistan. And this is against the backdrop of rising tensions between India and Pakistan over cross-border terrorism and specifically the attack on Uri.
Well, for starters, our primary focus is business. I think I would be amiss if I didn't mention that the stock markets have reacted very poorly to the strikes. But that is only to be expected. I mean, it's probably the same reason why when there's turmoil in the stock market, everyone turns to gold. Mm-hmm. Right. But that said, I think this is a fundamental rewriting of the traditional way in which India has tackled the issue of cross-border terror. Right. I think it is known to everyone everywhere in the world who's got their head screwed on right that a lot of terrorism in India, especially the northern part of India, is fomented from across the border, specifically from Pakistan. And there have been several instances where previous Indian governments have threatened Pakistan with strict action. Nothing has really happened. Mm. The 2008 terror attack in Mumbai, during which part of the Taj Mahal Hotel burnt, was another example of this. There was clear evidence of Pakistan's involvement. Nothing much came of it. I think this time around, India's response has been fitting in many ways. Fitting from the diplomatic perspective, because it did manage to derail the SAARC summit, which was supposed to happen in Islamabad. It withdrew, Afghanistan withdrew, Bangladesh withdrew, Bhutan withdrew. To me, that counts as a diplomatic victory. And now the surgical strikes, which has never happened before. Right. I don't think any Indian government has done this before. We'll obviously have to wait and watch how Pakistan reacts. Mm. But that said, this government has sent out a message that it is not afraid to make hard decisions, that it is quite prepared to follow up its muscular conversation, because the tone of its conversation is extremely muscular, with equally strong action on the ground. So I think it's a good move, and we'll have to wait and watch how it evolves over the next few days.
So moving on, we move to the story on the EPFO, which is the Employees Provident Fund Organization, which is going to invest 10% of its corpus, you know, in the stock markets.
Yeah, maybe more, they say. This is India's state-owned pension fund manager, which manages pensions for millions of employees. It's got a huge corpus, and it traditionally invested only in debt. Why? Because very conservative, the classic Indian approach of stocks being risky, despite studies clearly showing that in the long run, equities have the best return. I mean, as long as your frame of reference is very long. Sure, if your frame of reference is a year or 2 years, then things could change. But if your frame of reference is 10 years or 20 years, equities outscore every other instrument. And I think the pension fund, EPFO, has that kind of time frame for its investments. And last year was the first year that it invested in equities. It did around 5%. This year it's going to increase it, which means this year it could invest around 14,000 crores odd in the stock market, which is not much if you look at the overall scheme of how much money is invested in the stock market. But it is significant for this organization. I'm told that the returns last year were very good, which has probably encouraged them to invest this year. But even if the returns a particular year are bad, I think they would do well to take 7 or a 10-year perspective and take a call based on that. I think it's a sign of progress in some ways, the fact that the pension fund manager is investing in the stock markets. And more power to them. One of the people we spoke to for the article that we published actually told us that if things go well, we could invest as much as 15%. More power to them, I say.
Not happy about it.
Yeah, the trade unions are understandably unhappy about it, because I think the trade unions perhaps don't understand the stock markets. They think that this is like gambling, but it's not as if the pension fund manager is going to go out there and invest in penny stocks, right? I mean, they're probably going to pick the blue chips. Mm. And if you pick the blue chips, and if you pick smartly over a 10-year window, you will do exceedingly well. I mean, you don't need to be a great fund manager. You can have a completely defensive play and still do exceedingly well.
So moving on, the next story is e-commerce, and according to reports, Walmart is in talks with Flipkart to invest as much as $1 billion, and it's reported that probably the move is to counter Amazon.
Yeah, this is an interesting story for several reasons. I mean, there's been a buzz about it. Our own newsroom has been unable to nail it. Several of the wire services have carried stories.
Right.
One of our rivals, Economic Times, has also carried this story. I'm not sure whether it is still happening, right? Because I don't know how kosher the sourcing is for any of these people. Does it make logical sense? Of course it does. Why? From the perspective of the seller, which means the company which is going to sell some of its stake, which is Flipkart.
Right.
They need more money. Funds have more or less dried up. They have a huge valuation. They need a huge investment. And clearly, everyone's been talking of various companies in the e-commerce space, including Alibaba as a possible investor. I don't think anyone even thought of Walmart. Has a lot of money. He's in the retail space. Just made a huge investment in e-commerce. Wants to compete with Amazon. And in India, which is Flipkart's primary competitor, it's Amazon. So it makes logical sense from the seller's perspective. From the buyer's perspective, Walmart has for long wanted a piece of the Indian retail pie. Indian laws do not allow it to have that directly. Its last joint venture with Bharti ended in disarray. So clearly, the company would like to get some sort of presence in India. So it's not entirely, what can I say, unexpected or illogical. It makes sense. But just because something makes sense doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen. If you were to ask me to take a guess, I would think the two would probably enter into some sort of partnership wherein Walmart finds a sales avenue through Flipkart, gets onto the Flipkart platform. I'm not so sure about an investment, but I've been wrong before. So we'll have to wait and watch how this goes.
Right.
Because, you know, if you look at the reports, one of the wire services said in early stages.
Yes.
The very next day, one of the wire services said in advanced stages.
So right, we don't
so I don't know what to believe. If right. at all, I should believe anything.
Right. So the last story is about India improving in the Global Competitive Index, which is the World Economic Forum's index.
I think an improvement of 16 positions
right.
to rank 39, right?
Yes.
Is huge. Why is it huge? Because one of the primary focus areas of the current government has been the ease of doing business. And if you look at several measures that it has initiated in terms of registering a business, more importantly, in terms of closing a business,
right.
Which is the entire bankruptcy code, where, you know, I think the rules and regulations will be shortly announced or put up for discussion. The broader policy is actually in place. I think there have been a lot of initiatives that this government has taken. How does it matter? I think capital can flow anywhere in the world. Investors look for the best place to put their money in.
Right.
There are a variety of factors to drive this, and many of those factors are pretty much the same factors that are taken into account for the competitiveness index. So it is a sign that the Indian economy is probably headed in the right direction. There's still huge room for improvement, right? I mean, India is the kind of country which has first generation problems, second generation problems, and third generation problems all at the same time,
right?
And we've still not managed to solve some of our first generation problems, even as we have to grapple with evolving third generation problems. I would characterize sanitation as a first generation problem. I would characterize environmental crisis, which is being brought about by the overdependence on fossil fuels, as a third generation problem, because the solution is really futuristic, solar and wind and renewables. And we are moving towards that. If you look at it, India is one of the countries which is where there's been a lot of investment in solar. So there are a lot of issues, but I still think this is a very significant achievement for a country which was grouped with a lot of other countries towards the middle or the second half of the listing. It shows that it is possible to do business in a relatively easy way in India. Relatively easy is the key term there. It's probably not as easy as some of the other countries, probably not as easy as Singapore, but
right.
hopefully we should get there. And it's also probably an indication of the country's competitiveness in a variety of areas. To me, the fact that a lot of mobile phone manufacturers are actually assembling or even assembling, right? Because all mobile phone manufacturing is assembling in India is a significant achievement because these guys are the canaries of the manufacturing world, right? I mean, they are the lead indicators.
Right.
You know that if they are doing something in an area, it probably means that in terms of manufacturing, probably it is competitive to manufacture or assemble mobile phones in India. One, because of the market, but two, also because of the prevailing ecosystem. And some of those are also probably being reflected in the competitiveness rating. I think it's a huge achievement. It's not easy to go up any ranking by 16 points. Hopefully, the country can keep the momentum going.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.